All right, so I'll do a quick intro and then we'll dive right in. I've got too much to talk about. Unfortunately, I committed the cardinal sin with this talk and put in too many slides and too many things into it. So we'll see if I can get through it. I'll try to hold the questions during the session. If it's a burning question, go ahead and ask, fine. And we'll, you know, it's an intimate crowd, so we should be all right. But we'll try to make it through. The talk is really about SQL federations, how to scale your SQL Azure databases, and the idea about, you know, what you really need to do, what we've actually learned in the last couple of months that this technology has been out with implementations, customers who've been kind of playing with the technology, and really talk through some of the things that made it easier for them to really move into this thing. So that's what we'll actually talk about. Let me go all the way to the beginning and start here. My name is Jihan Bricola. I'm a program manager in the SQL Azure team. I've been there too long. I actually started with the team before. At the time, it was an incubation. And worked on many of the features. Owned most of the programmability surface of the technology first. But it's not all my fault. Been a lot of different interesting features, like, you know, the first 50 gigabyte update, enabling spatial. Those are all the things I've kind of contributed to quite a bit. But recently, I've been working on this thing called federations, which is basically an elastic scale-out system that you can construct with SQL databases, SQL Azure databases, to get up to 75 terabytes. I know you know that there's a 150 gigabyte limit on these SQL Azure databases. They're fairly low power. They're fairly small. But if you actually stitch them together, you got quite a few of those things we can actually sell. So if you stitch them together, they're a powerful bunch. We've got hundreds of nodes in every one of our data centers for SQL Azure. If you bring the computational capacity of that together, it really provides a lot of interesting scalable technology. In fact, we've got internal properties who have their dedicated clusters set up this way with some of the older businesses that we have at Microsoft. In our initial projects, where we had on a single cluster 150,000 databases, this was just one customer, which implemented a very similar technology. And in fact, most of the stuff that I'll actually talk about are things that we're doing internally inside SQL Azure for our own implementation. So you'll actually get to see quite a bit of the under the hood of what's available there. But that's kind of my quick story. Well, let's dive in. This is what we'll cover. As I said, it's too much, but hey. We'll go through the overview just in case. How many people created a federation so far? A few, okay, all right. So I think we'll spend a little more time maybe in the overview then. And then we'll dive right into tips and tricks. And how many people know what sharding is? Let me ask that question. All right, much better. And we'll talk about what sharding is, I guess, a little bit more, too. But I've got the tips and tricks kind of divided into two sections. There's design time tips and tricks, which are really things about designing your database for scalability. I talk about scale-first database design, which, if you've been doing database design and data modeling, you know, normalization and all of those things, well, this is kind of an add-on to that. So hopefully we'll get you a couple of things to pick up if you haven't heard this before. And then I've got the administration time kind of tips and tricks, which are things that you do to fly the plane smoothly. And these are basic administration operations that you can actually do. So all the list is there. And then at the last section, we'll actually talk about what's new, what's coming. I talk about the stuff we've been doing since December when this technology just got out, and also a couple of the things that are coming up down the pike. We'll also refer to them during the slides as well. So let's get started. So what is this thing about? Federations, the confusing name, you know, all Star Trek themed kind of operations we actually try to do. It basically is really to satisfy the cloud scale model. So what we're actually seeing is SQL Server databases are fantastic for classic applications, but when it comes to cloud, there is a new set of workloads that really need a scale that's beyond scale-up. Some of these cloud properties, the web applications, cannot be satisfied with the scale-up model that we have. And we basically need to give them a scale-out model that scales beyond just tens or 20s of nodes. I mean, it just doesn't help to do that, especially with the fact that we need to do that with the great economics. What great economics normally translates to is commodity machines, hardware that we actually buy purposefully and deliberately that's not on the cutting edge, but it's actually great at price performance points. Not at just pure performance. It's not the best hardware in the world, but it's got the fantastic price performance capability and number to really give you the best kind of transactions per dollar type of figure. So the basic idea with federations is to satisfy both of those things, is to be able to give you a scale characteristic that can harness hundreds of nodes, and the ability to do that with great economics. The bottom graphs I stole from Mark, and he basically had this fantastically already figured out, but it really shows you what the provisioning model is, and this is the other part of the economics of the cloud, is the fact that on the left, you actually see what happens on-premise. So the yellows and the reds that you see are the overcapacity and undercapacity that you have to live with when you purchase hardware. I mean, hardware, you can't sell it back. On the right side, you see the cloud provisioning model, which has a lot less red and yellow, much fewer cycles spent on overcapacity and undercapacity. And that really is an important part of it. And that's what federations do. Federations provide you the ability to expand and shrink the pool of databases that you stitch together dynamically without any downtime and repartitions your data to be able to do all of these things. So the model is, as I kind of ride the elevator, this is how I tell the story of federations to somebody who's riding with me who may have asked the question. I don't get the question very often, though. This is what federations are about. It's really extending the model of the front tier and the middle tier of the application scale-out model, which we've been used to for the last couple of decades, which is, you know, you stand up a few servers in the front tier, stand up a few servers in the middle tier, start with the database, and life begins. You open up the doors, they start pouring in, and as user load goes up, you add more servers. Everything is great. But what do you do with the database side? You have to go buy a bigger machine. And the idea with federations is to extend that model all the way to the database tier to be able to say, no, the database can actually add more nodes. We can repartition this stuff. And you can actually get more nodes and more computational capacity with your database. So it's the same idea. And if you can do this online, well, it basically kind of translates to what you can do with the front tier and the middle tier. So it's extending that model that you have with the front tier and the middle tier all the way to the database, and just making all of these things elastic. And it's also alignment with all the Windows Azure principles, which are things that basically take on the responsibilities of scalability, elasticity, high availability onto the server side of things, so that SQL Azure takes care of all of these things and you don't have to worry about them. And the service basically takes care of most of these things. Four things as to why people actually do this. They obviously discover quickly that a single SQL Azure database doesn't have a lot of power. You know, that single node has to carry 2/3 of the node is reserved for the secondaries in SQL Azure in every DB node. We have to have 3 copies of your databases for that SLA, and that means out of every 3 databases, 2 of them are secondaries that we have to maintain. So it's a fairly small 1/3 of the machine where we also put many other people right next to you. So it's a multi-tenant environment. We can scale down the database size really small. That's a great advantage for us. The smaller database that you can purchase at SQL Azure is fantastically cheap. It's a 100 megabyte database. But at the same time, it means that the upper limit, the ceiling, is not that high. So if you want to go beyond those limits, you actually want to scale out. If you want the best economics, you want that provisioning model that I was talking about. You want to provision just in time, before the kind of crowd shows up at the door, this is the technology to do it. And if you like multi-tenancy, if you're into efficiency and you basically are a ISV that's developing applications much like we do, we actually use the same node for many, many of our customers, as long as we can actually fit them. And in the multi-tenancy world, these are the things that your application may be doing. So you may actually take a single database and say, oh, these guys are like free writers, or they're the bronze package. So why don't we actually put them all together into a single database and save some money? And you can do that with any database in SQL Azure. But the problem is this, is basically, how many tenants are you going to put into that database? Can you make a static decision about 10, 20, 100, 1,000? I don't know. It depends, right? And if you have to decide and statically stick with that decision, it's a hard one. If you never have to decide, if you can change your mind about it, it's an easy one. So with SQL Azure Federations, you can change your mind. You can put 1,000 people on there. If it looks like it's not working out, you can split the database. You can make 500 and 500. If that doesn't work, you can split it further. You can make it 250 and 250. And you don't have to be stuck. If one of those customers grow into the gold package, you can also split them and move them into the middle section of that of the diagram that you see, which is you can give them a dedicated node. You can actually say, oh, yes, sir, you paid the big bucks, and we can actually move you to your own database if you want to, and you can get the full capacity of that node. And even to the other side, all the way to saying, well, here's my largest set of customers, and I'd like to spread them over to a number of nodes. I don't know how many nodes. I mean, at the end of the month, they may be closing their business, and that report requires 100 nodes. Maybe it requires 20, right? But you can actually change your mind about it, and that's the best part of the whole thing. And as they need more capacity, you can actually expand. This takes you to hundreds of nodes and hundreds of databases, and that's the idea. And finally, we actually, this is basically implementation of the sharding pattern inside SQL Azure natively. Very few environments do this. In the database world, I really don't know any database system that actually does this. NoSQL environments, there are quite a few that actually obviously use this. So what I call SQL federations is basically this NoSQL gene inside SQL Server. And it really gives you that NoSQL kind of scale with the same kind of patterns inside SQL Server. You don't have to live without transactions, and you don't have to live without backups and point-in-time restores and recoveries and everything else, which we'll talk about. I know that some of those things are not available yet, but we're working on them. And all of those things are things that you can actually still take advantage of, all the efficiencies, but you can use this sharding pattern inside it. And that really is kind of a simplified development model, easy to use, easy to operate kind of an environment. That's why people actually use this technology. All right, so what does the architecture look like? Well, it's actually fairly simple. Federation, this is how you stand one up. That top command over there that you see, create federation, that's it. You go to a database, you run this command, creates a federation. What it basically creates is it's an object. It's just like your tables and stored procedures and everything else, but it creates an object that is slightly special. Slightly special in the sense that it scales out of the database to another database. So it's analogous in some ways to a create database statement too. So there's an object that you create in the root database, which is the guy that's sitting there. This is like any database in the system, you can do this, except master. When you create the federation, it creates the first member. And it's basically range partitioning today, but the idea is these databases are system managed, and as you split, we actually give you more databases, and as you drop, we actually give you less databases, so you can actually expand and contract this thing. The federation root represents that database that has the federation object. So that's what the SalesDB is. But the outer box, which is the containment model, says that that database can actually discover all these other databases that are part of the system, and those are the federation members that you actually see. Federation members hold parts of the data that you scale out. It is up to you as to how many of them you get, depending on the split points you actually come up with. We'll actually take a look at that. But as you split, this is not a static number, and your application doesn't have to work with 100 or 20 or 30. We'll see how your application can actually be written once and never has to care about how many partitions are in the system. And even in the case of just the moment of split, as we switch over to the new configuration and the new layout of your system, the application doesn't have to do anything. And all of those things are taken care of by the environment. But the federation members are slices of data of the full data set that you scale up. And the idea with the range partitioning is that you can actually create the split points, and those split points basically decide how many members you get. Atomic units. There's basically a federation scheme that you create with this statement. And I basically, to the right side of the statement, you can actually see that you need to provide a federation key label, an data type, something like an integer begint or something like that, and a distribution type, which can only be ranged today. But with those things, federation key is the definition that you're actually making. And the federation key is basically how you distribute that data. We'll talk about how you come up with one. It's actually not that complicated. But it basically gives you this ability to say, well, I'm going to distribute my customers over on my orders and order details table. And that's what I'm actually going to do. And this is where you start defining that concept. And the atomic unit is basically the collection of rows that belong to a single instance of the federation key. So customer 55 may have some data about their address and all the demographic information. And then they may have some orders and a collection of order details records. All of those things is an atomic unit. And that atomic unit is something we promise not to split any further. So the atomic unit is always guaranteed to stay in a single node. And that's what the atomic unit represents. It's basically everything that belongs to a single instance of the federation key. This is kind of the magic. This is what V1 is about. So I'm basically telling the story of V1. The split and the drop command allow you to manipulate this collection of databases that you see inside the federation. And this is the command you issue to split the database. You basically specify, in this case, we actually have a federation member that covers 5,000 to 10,000. And we're splitting at 7,500, right in the middle. What happens when you do this is in the background, we create two databases. We say, oh, fine, we can actually start populating this data. So we'll start a replication stream. This is exactly what we do for your replica rebuild. So since you have three copies, we have to do this for your databases all the time. And as you update them, we actually have to populate data to all the other replicas. So this is just exactly that technology, except that it filters the rows as they fly through. So it will filter them at that point, the 7,500. And we'll make sure that rows less than that fly to the left and rows more than greater than that value fly to the right. And that's all we're doing. But those databases have their replicas. So you're actually looking at three databases kind of coordinating. There's actually nine because of all the three copies we have to maintain. But this is what we do. This takes a while, depending on how much data you have, how much update you're making during this process. All of those things impact it. But when you're done, we basically say, all right, switch over so that the old database goes away. The two new databases that we've actually created, and the operation stays online. That's why we actually use three databases instead of reusing an existing one. Because if you did a massive delete or a massive cleanup, you would actually be locked out of your tables due to lock escalation and all those other things. But we basically never use the database. These are fairly small things anyway. So we basically, once we're done, we drop that original database, bring these guys in. This is a very quick operation for us. It's actually exactly like failover. And voila, you have one more database that you've just added to your system. So it basically starts looking like you've got 5,000 to 7,500, 7,500 to 10,000 as your split, as your kind of layout for the federation. You can keep doing this all day. You can do it on all the federation members all at once, and all those things work. But the nicety of it is it's online. You don't have to take downtime. The other magic that we have in V1 is really this command. So in the presence of all of these things that are changing underneath your application, you can have 10 members or 20 members at any moment in time. You need a command and a guarantee that says, well, how am I going to find customer, 7,501? Where is that customer? I mean, a second ago, it was in that other database. Now it's in this other guy. So I need a guarantee. I need a way to navigate to them. And if you have to cache this information, which is what sharders do in many of the systems, you basically have an invalid cache. And you have to worry about cache coherency and all of those things in your app servers. So everybody keeps rewriting this code over and over again. So we decided to take this into the server side. We basically give you a command that's very similar to use database statement. Use database is different in the sense that it takes a database name and takes you there. In our case, we actually know a lot more about your schema. So we can say, what customer do you want to go to? And you tell us what customer, and we take you there. You don't have to care. And this guy is built with the retry logic and everything else. So all the modern commands that we're building in SQL now have the retry logic built in, so you really don't have to do much. If it's at the moment of switchover, this guy will actually sit there and retry, and you may see a higher latency, but it will eventually get there. So that's it. Any questions so far? No. Good. All right. Oh no, one. Okay. it's a left-inclusive, right-exclusive setup today. We'll make that configurable in the future, but 7500 is always in the range low of the member. So it actually falls into that. So great question. Thank you. In fact, can I interest you in a poster, sir? Great Father's Day gift, if you haven't bought anything for your dad. By the way, I've got tons of these here. So if you guys want to come and grab it, that's great. To make your dad happy. If he's into federations. If he's not, too bad. All right, so tips and tricks. Let's carry out. So I'll talk about the design time tips and tricks first, and we'll just kind of walk through that. The first one is picking federations. All right, so we talk about all of these things. It's a new concept. How do you actually come up with this thing? And really, it mimics the data modeling process. So how many people know normalization, database normalization? All right, thank you. It is really an extension of that. You do the normal things that you normally do for a data model. You go to your application, you discover what you want to model, and you look at your scenarios and you say, oh, I've got a couple of options. I can do this or I can do that. But it basically boils it down to a normalization process, and you know, you can go up to third normal form, or you can go up to normal form 6. I think there's a 7 now. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, so everybody understands this process. But once you're done with that, there's a set of principles that you can apply to really make your database scalable. And I blog a ton about these things, so you can read about scale-first database design, how to do this. And many of these principles are the same principles you would apply to any system. So these things apply to sharding if you're doing your own sharding. These things apply to NoSQL databases if you're designing a NoSQL database schema. If it has a schema. But all the things that you will actually be doing really help and apply in much the same way that you actually normally would do it. And the first step to this is basically discovering something called a table group. I call this a table group because it is the set of entities. It's a group of tables that represents a set of entities. And when you look at your application, if it's SalesDB, you can actually see things like product. Product is a products table, but there's also this products category table that hangs off of it. Well, it's those two tables are product tables, product entity, right? It's all the properties of the product that I want to represent. That's a collection. And that's what you see at the bottom within the root database that's enlarged and white. Those are the table groups. So customers is much like that, right? Customers have customer addresses and customer categories, maybe customer risk factors and blah, 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 right? Or customer issues in the past that you may have actually created. All of those things hang off of customer. It depends on how you model these entities, but you can actually think about a collection of tables that make up a group of things that really say, when I transact a customer, that is what I work with. Orders and order details, a table group, right? That's what you identify, and you kind of come up with these things. They may have relationships with each other, like customers have many orders. That's great. These entities have relationships with them. But they basically can be fairly quickly identified. The next thing you want to do is identify the ones that you want to scale out. So all of these tables, when you start your data model, you're starting with a single database model, right? All of these things are in the root database, in the database that you have the federation. But what you want to do is take the one that you want to scale out, or take the ones that you want to scale out, and then put them on federation, on a federation, or on federations, and be able to define that schema slightly morphed with additional annotations so that you can scale it and stretch it over to multiple databases. And that's what federations are about. That's how you come up with your federation. So is it in your application that you expect too many orders? Is it that you have too many customers looking up information? Are you giving stock quotes? Are you collecting device information, right? All of those things can tell you what entities you really need to go try start thinking about scaling. And once you actually start thinking about those things and discover these table groups, you actually end up with a collection of things that are good candidates for things that you may want to scale out. You may have more than one. You may have products and orders. And you may say, well, they don't actually fit together because they don't scale out the same way. I may pick different federation keys because I may want orders to be scaled out with customer ID, and products doesn't have a customer ID. So I really need to think about multiple federations and how to place them. And that's a process you can walk through. So the number of these things you can actually sometimes put together into a single federation if they're aligned. And sometimes you need to put it into a separate federation. And both of those things are perfectly fine. You can create more than one federation inside the database. Yeah, there's a question.
Is there any concept of nothing those, like you want my order by state, and then order, the groups of order, if you make them by state, for
Yeah, we don't have that yet. You'll see in many of our schema, we've actually designed it this way. So we'd love to do that. If there's enough of a need, and I've actually seen quite a few systems that actually start needing this, you can do it. Today, the workaround is, so we don't do this today, but today the workaround is to actually take both of those keys and create a hierarchy in our binary to say, look, the first 10 characters is my customer ID or the region ID, and then the second part is the customer ID or something, right? And you can stitch these two properties together and make them a single federation key, but you need to have a single federation key today, and you can't create federations inside federation. Integer var binary unique ID, and the var binary is the one that is interesting because it could be up to 900 bytes. So it's fairly large federation key if you wanted to create that. But binary, anything can be turned into a binary, and that's very easy translation within the engine. Everything actually has a implicit conversion back and forth between binary. So binary is a great type. Most of the people use that for that. Absolutely. So the story is you're going to identify the candidates, and the next thing you actually want to do is continue to apply the scale-first kind of principles to your database. And these scale-first principles is that you identify the table group. You say, all right, orders and products. Those are the two things I want to scale out. Maybe I'm Amazon, and I've got too many products to actually put into a single database. I may have different options for that, but let's say that's the way we're actually going. I need to now decide, how do I distribute this thing? So for orders, you can think of many different ways. You can say, well, order date. Why don't we actually pick order date? Order date could actually just spread this data all over the place. Now we can split it by day and be happy. Or you could say customer. Customer ID, that's a great way to distribute all the information because I've got lots of transactions where customers may actually want reports off of their orders. They may want to track the shipments and everything else. And when they log into the system, I get a customer ID. So it's very easy for me to navigate with that information, as opposed to knowing when they log in what day they actually placed the order in, right? It may be tough for me to go figure that out. So why don't I consider customer ID? Or there could be many other options. You could say order ID, right? I'm just going to put all the orders in all the databases. Just spread them around. And you could do that too. And depending on your scenarios, the right answer is different. It's just like data modeling. It's just like normalization. The right answer is different. But you can come up with a couple of reasonable things to kind of consider. And these are candidate keys. And then you apply these things to them. You basically say, look, I'm going to come up with a federation key, but the atomic units, so the individual customer 55 or 56, I better actually optimize this key to the low latency and scalability sensitive kind of queries that I want to write within the system. Because when you have your federation key in your hand and you walk into the system, it's very easy to navigate. You've seen the use federation statement. You just pass it to that. It takes you there. But if you come into the system, let's say, with an order date, well, that is a challenge, right? So that's going to be a high latency operation in this kind of federations. And this is a compromise that you have to kind of understand and play with. So look at your application scenario. Look at what are the things that are latency and scalability sensitivity, has this kind of sensitivity, and what are the queries that I want to run fast within my environment? That's the translation of it. And just make sure that the federation key is part of that. If federation key is part of that, then you're golden. The second rule is to make sure that you transact within the boundaries of the atomic unit. So when you transact, you're transacting within customer 55 most of the time. Or if you're transacting within your system, you better be kind of working with a single atomic unit. Because you could, at any moment in time, you could actually take customer 55 and 56 and put them in two different databases. You can split at a point, and you can actually spread those things into two separate members. So you need to make sure that the transactional boundary is within a single atomic unit. And that's an important kind of principle to apply. The other one is equally distributing the workload. So we talked about I guess there's a lot of real life examples of partitioning that are inefficient. I'm sure all the guys will kind of relate to this. If you've been trying to hit the restrooms right after all the sessions are ended, you can see the huge line on the men's room. There's nothing going on in the women's room. So apparently that is not a good way of partitioning the restroom resource, right? So we need to think of a better way of partitioning the restroom resource, and we just need to come up with a better way, right? But that's an inefficiency. That basically the fail female-male kind of separation obviously doesn't work in this case, right? That, it didn't. So you need to think about your federation key the same way. If we kind of pick up our example, in that example, you basically could come up with the order date. But guess what will happen when people are trying to place orders? It's going to be that last member that you have for today. That's going to be working really, really hard. All the other members are going to be staying idle. They're just going to maintain some archival information. Maybe there's one or two customers looking up their orders from the last 3 days, but they're going to sit idle. So when you look across your members, you basically want them all working, because that's the idea with federations, is that all of these nodes provide the computational capacity to your environment, and they actually get it. So important principles to apply, absolutely critical. And the last one is, you need to make sure that the largest atomic unit, so largest customer you have, if that's the key that you're picking, largest customer can actually fit into the scale-up limit, because we don't split the atom. If customer 55 gets 150 gigabytes, we're screwed. So you really need to make sure to pick a key that really ensures you're granular enough within the system. So if you've got customers that are really large, you may want to say customer ID partition ID or customer ID something else. That actually gives you the ability to kind of further split that customer into multiple databases. So all of those things are possibilities. Or if you're going to come up with a day, you make sure there's not more than 150 gigabytes of things. So you're a safe distance away from that limit. Yes?
I don't really have an exact question, but for read versus write, what partitioning can you talk about that?
Read versus write really doesn't matter, because all of these databases, you want them working as hard as possible. The only thing I can tell you about that versus what you're used to on-premise is the fact that reads are pretty much not any different in the way we actually do them in the cloud versus on a regular database on a single node. But writes, we actually do a network write. It's a fairly expensive thing. So the three copies that I was talking about, you actually have to write at least to two of them before you can commit the transaction. And that means the write transactions that you actually do, they're going to have to make a network write. So I hear all of this talk about applying some of the things you know from the on-premise world, like page splits and fragmentation and some of these things. And sometimes you got to watch out, because some of those things may not really apply. They may just be noise compared to the network write you're actually having to do, right, in the environment. And this is, you get availability because of this, but latency suffers. I mean, there's laws of physics, not much we can do. We try to do that as quickly as possible. We don't write the tree, but those are the types of things you got to consider. But from a read and write standpoint, you can actually basically, this whole collection is uniformly scaled. So if 100 nodes aren't enough, you can go to 200 nodes. And the idea is, the decision is never static about how many members you have to come up with. It's just that you need to find a good enough way that distributes all the read and write load to all the different parts of the system. That's kind of the scale-first database design idea. So you come up with the federation column basically based on these principles. So given the kind of set of things we have evaluated, usually the right answer for many people is customer ID, which they randomly generate as a GUID, and then that spreads customers to all the different federation members, and they can split at any point, and they're happy because they can be processing many, many orders all at once. Question? Of course. Mm-hmm. Yep. Great question. So I can repeat the question. So basically, what's your name? Vyas is saying that you guys don't tell us how many transactions this thing can do. How am I supposed to come out with the number of federation members, or how am I supposed to know what they can handle? That's a very good question. It's the topic of what I'll be talking about in just a few slides. But the basic answer is, you're right. We don't tell you. But it is a fairly small database. We can talk about my experience, at least in the past. I've actually seen very complicated transactions go from, you could do 20, 30 a second sometimes, right, if they're extremely complicated transactions. Or you could be on the upper side. You could be doing hundreds of transactions if they're extremely simple read type of transactions that you're doing. But it's a large range, and it's not a guaranteed resource reservation today, resource reservation model. But the idea with federations is you really don't have to decide. You can actually spread enough to be able to say none of these things are going to hit hundreds of transactions. They may actually just stay below 100, and as long as that's the case, I'm actually fine. And if I actually see throttling, I can split and continue to split to expand the system further. Now, there are downsides and upsides to this, but until we actually give you the guarantees, this is kind of what the life looked like. Ooh, so very good question. So basically, the follow-up to this is, well, that sounds expensive. And I'll show you how the pricing looks like in another slide to actually answer that question. So let me hold that, and I'll show you exactly why that is really not so expensive to actually do it. Because the basic idea is a 20-gigabyte database versus two 10-gigabyte databases, they do not cost the same money. Two 10-gigabyte databases are much, much cheaper. And there's about a 10% difference sometimes between the two. But you're only paying 10% extra for the added excess to the computational capacity you get out of two nodes versus one node. Right? That's kind of the idea. But we'll get to that and talk about that in just 1 second. What am I doing on time? Terrible, probably. Yeah. All right, so the next set of steps, this was picking federations and federation keys. And once you've actually done that, you've got your data model. This is a scalable. This is where the database kind of major database design decisions kind of end. This is another one that you really want to consider, which is a reference table. So in certain cases, what's a reference table? A reference table is basically a table that, for those low latency, scale sensitive transactions, you actually have some lookup information, stuff like zip code, right? All of those things are things you use in those transactions, but they're not aligned to customers. They're not necessarily partitioned the same way. They're not part of the table group. So those tables end up getting left in the root database. They don't get moved with the table group. But there's still a consideration for them, because it actually would be nice if I could actually just join into that table locally and just process it while I'm there at customer 55 and look up the zip codes right there without having to go up to my application and query some other database. And all of those things. So it basically gives you ease of transactions, ease of querying, and lowers your latency. It's an optimization that you can make. But you need to basically pay attention to two important things if you want to do this. Number one, you may actually know exactly which these tables are, but look at your latency-sensitive operations and see which ones you actually want to do. Do move into members. And when you do, you have to understand that we're going to repeat and clone that table in every one of your federation members. So the collection of databases that you'll see at the bottom, they're going to get the zip code table, and they're going to get a copy of their own. So that means you're actually going to have many copies of this data, which means if you update one, that's really going to be eventually consistent. At some point, you're actually going to get to a consistency, but you have to set up some replication yourself. So today, we actually don't do much for replicating that information. In future, we'll actually do a lot more. But you can use things like, you'll be able to use things like DataSync to be able to replicate that reference data across, but there's latency. There's latency. That means if you added a product on member 5, it may not show up for the next 5 minutes in member 2. Right. So are you okay with that? Are you okay? Is your application okay with that consistency? Is the other thing you want to know before you actually move something into a reference table. And this is an important kind of constraint for some people. So if you can't do that, that's a good indicator of things. So one more trick that comes up at design time is generating unique IDs. So my restroom fetish, I don't know why this came up all the time, but I guess generating unique IDs is another one of those bottlenecks that kind of like it's actually tough to do that with identity. Everybody, when I talk about generating unique IDs, they kind of go, well, it's identity. Identity property does that, right? That's the way you should do it. And identity is good, but it actually gives you a couple of guarantees. It gives you a guarantee that it will generate a sequential number, linearly increasing, and it actually guarantees that it will generate those values without any gaps. So those guarantees are fairly expensive. If I actually take my federated table and my orders, and I say, well, every order has to fly through this ID generation stuff, and it needs to get an order ID before it can actually get inserted into the database somewhere, or every customer that provisions itself needs to get one, it actually could become a bottleneck, right, in the system. So this global kind of guarantee within a scalable system, it could become a bottleneck. The other problem with identity is the fact that you have to insert something before you can actually say what was the identity value that was generated. Right? You have to insert it to be able to get that value back, or you have to hit the database tier at least to be able to get the value back. And that's a bit of a problem for the application, because all this time you've been preparing your orders to orders and order details, you're kind of working with a fake value. You basically say that to the database and it's no longer valid. Unique IDs, that's why I'm a big fan of unique IDs, and unique identifier or GUIDs basically can be generated at any tier of your application and don't have to be bottlenecked. They can actually be generated by anybody and they're unique, right? You can generate them at the database level if you want, but you can generate them some other place too. Yes? Very good, very good. In fact, I actually had that and removed that last night when I was practicing this thing. Very good. So I'll repeat the question. How about fragmentation? I mean, you say, you know, create a cluster key on this thing, and it needs to be part of the cluster key, by the way, so you're right about that. But what about fragmentation? And basically, fragmentation can happen. Usually, the worst kind of fragmentation that happens, and I've got a blog post about this you can go read, and there's a test that you can actually run to convince yourself if you'd like to look at the numbers on SQL Azure. But take a GUID and take an identity value, try to insert hundreds or thousands or millions of records, and see if you can actually come up with any difference between the two when you're inserting the values. Fragmentation happens because you delete stuff, and that's the worst kind of fragmentation that can happen, and that leaves a lot of room that you need to kind of compress back. But inserting into random spots, the only problem you get in terms of fragmentation is page split. And page splits are really multi-sub-second kind of operations. You remember that network write that I was talking about? Well, it turns out that thing is actually like 100 times more expensive than that. So it becomes this tiny noise within the whole system to basically say, well, I'm not going to insert in the order. And if you're not convinced, I challenge you to go out and try the test that I have on my blog and see if you can come up with it. Because I've been running this test for a long time. We look at it. It looks like noise. Because the write performance and scalability characteristics on SQL Azure is much, much different compared to what you have with SQL Server. If you test it on SQL Server, I can guarantee you you'll find a difference. If you test it on SQL Azure, you won't. So that's my kind of quick answer to that. But the benefits of unique identifiers is basically because it doesn't bottleneck, it actually becomes much easier. And it's uniquely identifiable, uniquely global, so it really makes it much easier to kind of work with it. And these fragmentation concerns, there's also questions that come up like splits. How do I split a range of GUIDs? I mean, that seems weird. And they're sortable. They're sortable. You can actually order by a GUID. And I'll show you how you can actually easily find the spot to split with GUIDs as well. I have a demo coming up. All right. So the last one that I want to talk about is writing fanout queries. So one of the things we don't give you in V1, this is going to get better in future. But one of the things we don't give, I'll hold the questions just for 1 second. I'll get back to you in a few seconds. Is the ability to kind of write a single query that addresses all of these databases all at once. So if you wanted to get all the orders from all the customers, well, you're going to go write a fanout query today in V1. And that fanout query is something that you need to write in your code. It's not something that we actually provide to you just yet. So what is this thing good for? Well, if you're doing reporting, that's kind of nice. It's also nice to be able to have fanout queries. If you have customer ID as your federation key, and you come into the system and say, well, I'm looking for a John. Where is John? And which customer IDs could that be? Right? You may want to get a collection. So anything that's unaligned to the federation key could actually benefit from fanout queries quite a bit, too. And even though they look scary, I will show you what the code looks like. And it really isn't that difficult to write these things. I've got a sample code that you can actually kind of use. You'll see it's basically about 15, 20 lines of additional code that you need to put to really go hit. The idea is you basically need to go hit all your federation members as opposed to just one. And to do that, there's a very easy way to kind of iterate through these things. And we'll actually take a look at that. But there's different types of fanout queries we'll talk about. One of them is union all. The other one is this aligned and unaligned. Union all is extremely simple. It's like you don't really have to do anything. The aligned and unaligned, it actually gets progressively more complicated as you kind of get to non-additive aggregates, you know, correlated subqueries and stuff like that. They actually become fairly difficult to write if they're unaligned, especially. But aligned aggregations are extremely easy to write. Unaligned is where it actually kind of starts getting interesting. But I'll show you examples of all. So breaking it down, this is basically MapReduce. If you heard that term, if you haven't ever looked at how many people have written a MapReduce query? One? OK. All right, so MapReduce, basically, you know, Hadoop, NoSQL, most of those environments actually provide the same capability. And it's the same kind of notion. What they actually do is they basically have a member-level query first. You have to break it into two steps. You have a member query that goes and executes on each member, collects the results, and then there's a summary query that post-processes on that union old result set to come up with things like, you know, let's say you're running top 10. Top 10 orders from the latest orders, right, from every Federation member. What you want to get is top 10 orders for the entire database. But when you execute that query in every one of your members, you're going to get top 10 from each member. So you need to do some post-processing to say, well, sort this thing and do another top 10. Right? That's the post-processing capability. And you can do that in parallel or in sequentially. But that's kind of the idea. And member query is the map. Summary query is the reduce. And that's basically the idea. Right? Everybody implements it this way. In the future, we're just going to collapse that. But it's, you know, for now, you have to write this query. Here's the pseudocode. You basically connect connect to the database. And the first code basically you see over there with the use federation is you go to the first member and to the beginning of the range. And you say, execute my member query right here. It executes the query, collects the results into a data set through a data adapter.fill. And then it says, what is the range high value of this member? Let me take that and rerun my use federation statement. And I do this again. So I do another data adapter.fill to the data set, execute the same query on member 2, execute it on 3, 4. And this guy actually merges it all together. Yes? The temp DBs, there's no single temp DB here involved. This is a scale-out system, so the temp DB is scaled out too. So every one of your members have a temp DB. But as you move from one member to the other, your temp tables do not move with you. So as you use federation, one of the differences is you really are not carrying your context with you from node to node to node. So that temporary context that you have in that node is gone by the time you switch to the next member. And that's why you can't really use that temp DB. But great question. Thank you. So that's the idea. And the final summary query usually is done either through linked to data sets, which is fairly simple to implement. I've seen people do it with data sets and queryability on data sets. So you can actually do top 10s and other things. Or you can do it if you're a SQL guy at heart. You can actually send the result set back to, just like you were kind of describing, you can send that result set that you get from all the members back to a temp DB and process it there and then come back with the results again. But it's kind of fairly insane to actually go through that that level of inefficiency to travel back to the database this way. I'll actually hold the questions if you don't mind, but do remember your question. So let me jump into this really quickly, see if I can make this work. So let's switch over to 3. Let's see, I've been doing Twitter. But I'll actually start you with this window. So I've got a couple of things I'm actually going to run through and show you how to write fan-out queries. They're actually fairly simple. There's a simple utility that you can actually use that I've deployed. It is the code is available as well. So if you wanted to see what the source code looks like, it's all available here. I'll send you. This is on my blog, and I have the location at the end. But it basically is the pseudocode that you were looking at. So if you look at this do loop right here, this is exactly what I was talking about. This is you go to the minimum value. You process the data adapter.fill, and this guy will take care of being able to kind of do that. You grab the next value and execute a use federation statement with that next value. So because the range high is exclusive, it basically, if it's 0 to 100, if you say use federation 100, it takes you to the next member, and you can iterate through this thing really fairly easily. And that's the code that you pretty much have to write. And at the end, I bind it to a data table so you can actually see the results. And this is this page. This is what this page looks like. I've got a connection string up here. basically, let me walk you through what the tool does. It takes a connection string, takes a federation name, and takes a query. And it basically takes that query and runs it on all the members. It just gives you a data table at the end. So let's take a look at what query we're running. This is a little more readable. This first one is going to grab the DB names of all the databases and the ranges, range high and range low, all the members, for example, from each one of these databases. So if I run this thing, I've actually run this thing a couple of times, but this is actually running on 75 Federation members as the implementation. It's in Southeast Asia, so it takes a while to actually come back, but usually it's faster. And this is my setup right now. So these are my system database names. You can basically put that into a connection string and talk to that database too if you wanted to. But these are the ranges and the database, the member IDs that you actually get with all of these things. So I've got 75 members that go up all the way to 9 million, it looks like, or 900,000. But this is one query that you could actually write. So it actually basically went and grabbed that from 75 databases. I could do schema deployment with this thing, or reference data management if you wanted to kind of do that. And one of the things I could do, I think I created a table one, so let me try a table two here. But I could basically, what I'm doing is creating table two, I'm inserting some values into it, and then I'm going to grab the results, and you should be able to kind of see what actually happens at the end. But every federation member, the 75 federation members, they're going to get a table two now in all of these things. Well, that was quick. I'm not really sure if that actually ran. Right. The value supply doesn't know do, do, do. Milliseconds. Well, this actually worked last night. Maybe. I don't see the error. You guys see it? Is there a mismatch in this? It says seconds and seconds. Date time, seconds and milliseconds. Seems like it should work. But. All right. All right, at least I'll create the table. That should work. All right, that looks like that's gone. And it came back. But you won't actually see much that's happening. Maybe we'll, now that we have the table, maybe we'll run the insert statement now. So we go on table two. DB name did do. I thought it actually was. All right, let's try select star. And it won't come back with, oh, there's a table two already. I guess that's what, all right, never mind. So let me do, I insist I have to do this. I don't give up that easy. Let me drop this table across all the things. I'll just do it again. So. All right, looks like this one is good working. So this is basically the end result of these came from all these different databases, and that was the minutes and seconds base, or sorry, seconds and milliseconds from every one of my databases. You can see that they're different. So. Clocks don't tick exactly at the same second, right? Just remember that. And basically, you know, it's a query that runs across all of these things, and it runs sequentially. So one of the other reasons why you actually are seeing different values at one of these things. There's a parallel version of it that I'll actually switch to in just 1 second and show you as well. But you can do things like maintenance on this thing too. If you wanted to run it, this is not so exciting because you're not going to get any output. But yeah, I can update all my statistics on all of these members with a single query. Well, it actually works. So fairly simple thing to do. Or We can do take a look at some of the DMVs, like take a look at the sessions per member. This one's still going. It actually takes a while to run this thing. The databases do have some data. All right, I'll wait for it to come back. But this one is basically hitting the DM exec sessions table on each one of the members, and it's basically going to give the database name and the session count from each database. So I can actually take a look at how many connections I have to each one of my members. I can basically see what's going on with each one of them. Boy, that's taking long. I guess I haven't updated statistics in a while. So let's. I can't wait, sorry. Let me make sure I execute this thing. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that won't work. Oh, I do? Right here? Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for not sleeping. All right. Looks like that worked. So number of sessions, 2, 3, 4. There's actually nobody else using this database, but even so, we actually have sessions. And I'll talk about connection pooling that we do at the gateway level that actually could cause this to be the case. But we actually do some level of connection pooling because we keep connecting with Use Federation. The gateway kind of manages another connection pool to do this. But this is the number of sessions per database that I'm actually getting. So all of these things you can see are fairly easy. These are all union all queries, right? I'm not doing anything other than a member query that says, run this, collect the results, union them up, send it to me. Right? That's all it is doing. But if you start looking at some of the other interesting aggregations, like this one's actually the total blog entries per blog. This becomes kind of interesting. Now, the point about this that is it actually groups by the blog ID, and blog ID turns out to be my federation key. So it is aligned. So what it's actually doing is blog IDs are spread across my database, and every one of these blogs that get randomly created, they get placed in different, different members. And as I kind of go aggregate, I'm actually aggregating within the atomic units. So I'm actually going to blog ID 7 and doing an aggregation and basically a count in that specific atomic unit. And because I'm doing that, I still don't have to worry about this. I can still go do this kind of a member query, and without all I need to do is just aggregate the results and bring it back. I'm actually looking for count greater than 4, so there's only a few few members that actually have that type of stuff. But this is going to go into all members, run the aggregate per blog, and it's going to collect the results and bring it back up. And you can see now that I've got a couple of blog IDs that have posted 14 entries, right? That's kind of the idea. And that's a perfectly valid result. It's what you would expect from results. So we call them, I call them aligned fan-out queries. These are fairly easy aggregations to implement. But imagine this one. So I'm looking for the average length of posts, average text length of posts per month across my entire data set. So this is, I didn't tell you much about this, but it's a blogs database. It basically has a blogs table, a blog entry table, and a blog comments table. And all of these three tables basically represents a blog. A blog is basically a person, an account that basically has a page. Blog entries are different entries, different blog posts that you actually do, and the comments basically are posts to that specific entry that people actually do. So you can imagine this one, you know, free on the web, somebody doing something like this, I know a few, that will actually need to scale out because these are freemiums and fairly interesting. But if I wanted to get the length of the text per month, right, how many characters people are posting on average, this actually is a query that you can express with an average for the length of the blog entry text. Well, it's fairly straightforward. But look at what you get. You get month 5. Repeated quite a few times, and there's month 6 right there, but they're not collapsed. What I would expect is that for month 5, I get an average, and for month 6, I get an average. Right? That's the way the results would actually come back in a scale-up database, in a single scale-up database. So I wouldn't have to worry about it. So I'll switch you over to this other page. The first page that I was showing you is the simple fanout tool, which only takes these three things, and it only takes a member query. But I'll show you one that takes a summary query as well. So this one actually does. And it's the same thing, except the fact that now I can specify a summary query. And it's parallelizable, too, so it actually just runs a little faster. All this time you've been waiting for results, and I could do it faster. But hey, I like the race time. So this one actually does it much faster because it's parallelized to 75 members, and I get the correct result because the summary table at the end basically takes the month entry and then takes average is an interesting, obviously interesting non-additive aggregate. You can't take the averages from each one and add them up. Yeah, that doesn't work that way. So you need to get sums and counts of these things. And then you need to calculate the average at the very end. So that's why the query at the top is slightly different. If you kind of take a look at it, it doesn't say average. It actually takes the sum and the count. This is a non-additive aggregate. And then it needs to calculate the average in the final summary clause based on the counts from each one of these databases and the text length averaged on top of that. So that's the way it actually works. But this is one of the other types of queries that you can type. So this is unaligned. Now, if you were to try to go to even more complicated queries, like you wanted to run a distinct count on all of these members, well, that is fairly interesting. If that kind of thing turns you on, you can actually go try it. But it actually is fairly difficult to write. So distinct count is one of those things where you need to count, you need to pull all the data before you can actually distinct the thing across your entire set of databases, and then you can actually return the results. So those are the ones that really start getting fairly hairy. I've got extensive blog posts about the types of queries you can write and the way you can write them. The code is available for download. All of this code is there, so you can go play with it if you want to embed it in your application. I just don't, I'm a PM. PMs don't write great code, so be careful. All right, so that's what I have for you for now. So let's switch over and continue. That was basically fan-out queries, and you've seen a simple few that you can actually use. So let's talk about the administration side of things. What do we actually do on the administration side? So a couple of tips and tricks to help you kind of fly this thing is really, number one, kind of around deployment of the schema. Now, I've been showing you the picture of the scale-out databases, and there's many databases involved in this thing. And guess what? They all have their own private schema. So there's no single schema for this thing that actually basically sits in one database that you can go just deploy just like a single database. You have to deploy the parts of the schema, the table groups that you scale out to the members. You have to do all of those things manually. But you've seen the fan-out tool is kind of a great ability to be able to go do that fairly easily. You can create a table, you can deploy, or you can maintain zip code table, for example, through that. If you wanted to delete and insert all the records, you can actually run that script across all of them. But it's still something that you really need to do. The reason for separating the schemas is basically an important reason, and in my opinion, it's a huge advantage. I realize the administration side of it is painful today. It will get much simpler, so that fan-out tool that you're seeing, we're actually going to have a version of that in the tools, and we'll actually make that easier to program again, so you can actually use that facility without having to rewrite the code all the time in future. But having the ability to have separate schemas basically gives you the ability to say, well, I've got a terabyte database, but I can upgrade like 5% of it, and I'm okay. I can actually say, change 5% of this table in a database. I really can't do that. But the database kind of world doesn't handle multiple schemas inside a single database all that well. It's transacted. It's a single operation that has to go and maintain that gigantic table. So it always becomes this military operation every time you're running a property and you have to maintain your schema. It becomes a military operation that's fairly complicated. You have to guess whether this is an online operation or an offline operation. Is it going to happen in 1 second, or is it going to go have to update every row in my terabyte table? Right, all of those things are fairly complicated. So having many small databases that actually stretch across, that actually gives you quite a lot of room to be able to do it much more flexibly. And it is a quite a disadvantage when it comes to administration overhead, though. So if you don't have the fan-out tool, it's actually painful to go do this. One of the things I will highly recommend, though, is writing idempotent scripts. And item potency is basically you can rerun the same script twice, still get the same result at the end. And the pattern is very simple. You basically check whether a table is there or a column is there, and then you go create it. So it's like the if exists, then blah, right? If it doesn't, then blah. So all of those things are important things that you should actually consider when you're writing the query. If you can actually make it idempotent, you can make it retryable. So if any failures happen, you can rerun it. And you don't have to be afraid, because it will produce the same result. And it will actually run. And it's resumable. So if it ever hits an error, it actually makes it easier. It also gets around the long transaction type of throttling issues that you may have seen on the environment, too. So long transactions are bad. Short transactions are good. So in our case, if it was idempotent and you could actually rerun it twice, most of the people say, oh, then I don't need a transaction. And they can actually do it. So also, you know, have a rollback script. It really makes a whole lot of difference to be able to kind of have this. These are things that are not necessarily just applicable to federations necessarily. To any database maintenance, you should actually basically have these rules. I think these are good rules to actually have for even a scale-up environment to actually maintain. For monitoring and troubleshooting, there are two types of monitoring that you can actually do. There's the federation operations themselves that you want to monitor. So when you split, you want to see how much progress there is on the split. You want to see where we're at. Are we 10%, 50%, 20%? And all of those things are visible from the SysDM federation operations set of DMVs. You can actually take a look at those. That will give you all the percent complete information. It's fairly easy to troubleshoot. But all of these commands you should understand. They have retry logic built into them. So even if a split was to fail internally, we actually retry. We don't report errors. These are all asynchronous statements, except use federation. So you submit the statement. You don't have to stay connected for the duration of an alter split. Alter split actually is a job that you schedule, and it actually happens in the background, right? All of these things are basically commands where you don't have to stick around. You can leave. We'll complete it. We'll just switch in whenever we actually are done. But monitoring and troubleshooting the members, well, that's not any different. If you've got a single database and you know how to troubleshoot that, just apply the same logic to the fan out to all of these things. You can actually see the number of sessions across all of these things. Or you can do yum exec query stats, right? You can do what is the most expensive query in this database. And you can run it in the fan-out tool and get all of these results. But the troubleshooting, idea of troubleshooting in federations versus something else is, it's the same thing. It's a database. So you troubleshoot a database. The way you troubleshoot a database is not different inside a federation member. There's nothing different that happens. Another one that actually comes up quite a bit is this question of what is the layout? And this is what you were kind of talking about initially. And how do you actually do this kind of cold start scenario? Well, the point of federations is the fact that you really don't have to live with a static decision. So this becomes a little bit less important, but you still want to have some logic to how you're actually going to lay out the first time. And there's no magic to that, right? The magic, basically, on a single database is you decide what type of hardware you want to get. You basically say, what is the first week, the first month, first year of the load that I expect? What does that look like? I simulate that. And all I need to really do is what I'll tell you in the next slide, which is know where and when to split. And if I know that, I can actually get to a point where the system actually has a good experience. So you need to define what a good experience and a bad experience is. But once you know what that looks like, you can actually decide what the split points are and how many members you actually need. And as I said, you can be looking at 20 transactions a second or 200 transactions a second, and you're going to be somewhere in that range, and maybe even more, right? You can actually do very simple transactions, many more of them. So maybe the ceiling is much, much higher than that. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's your application. And what your application defines as transaction is the one that really is important. So you need to test it to figure this out. One thing I'll tell you, though, smaller members and many members always help a lot more than fewer members that are large. So you can have a terabyte database. You can actually take 100 gigabyte databases. And 10 of them to actually get to that terabyte, or you can actually get 10 gigabyte databases and 100 of them to get to a terabyte. And I would favor the second. And the reason I don't think it's actually going to charge you all that much, it's not like you're paying twice as much, because it's a pay-as-you-go model. So if you look at the very bottom example, a 10 gigabyte database costs you $45.95 a month. And two 5 gigabyte databases cost you $51.94 a month. But the two 5 gigabyte databases have twice the number of cores, twice the amount of memory, twice the temp DB, twice the I/O capacity, and twice the storage capacity, and all of those things doubled. So about, what, 12% or maybe less than that in terms of price. It's actually a fairly good price to be able to kind of go smaller. It actually helps you with split times. It actually will reduce the split times if you have a smaller database because we're literally moving data. And it makes it easier to maintain, like the index rebuilds, fragmentation maintenance, all of those things gets much, much cheaper and easier in databases like that, smaller databases. And there's this question of where and when to split. And this is another one that's kind of key to many people. Is how do you actually decide, oh, all right, I've got 10 members, 20 members, whatever it is, but how do I know when to split again? And there's really no magic to this either. There are only two things you need to know. The first thing is, what is a good experience and a bad experience for a database? Or what do you consider a bad experience? So if a query takes over a second, that's a bad thing, all right. If there's blocking in your database, that's bad, all right. Is there like other indicators, maybe if there's more than 100 connections to my database, or 200 connections to my database, it actually starts getting crappy experience. All right, that's a good indicator. But know what those indicators are. Just figure this out. And for every application, there's a few that are interesting, but you need to kind of figure that out for the specific application. Once you know what that indicator is, you can basically set that as an alarm to be able to kind of say, you know, do I have this condition in all of my members, and use the fan-out tool to be able to kind of query across these things. And there are tools, third-party tools, that actually help you do this type of stuff. So tools like Azure Watch, for example, will actually do this automatically for you. It will actually set up an alert based on whatever rule you specify. So there's quite a lot of interesting things out there to be able to do that. The second thing you need to know is where to split. So you may decide, all right, member five, that's it. This guy's actually getting pretty bad. It's on a trajectory that's going to hit a wall. So I need to split, but what is the split point? It's 0 to 100. Do I split at 50? Maybe. But if the customers are from 0 to 50, and that's what is filling up that database, if you split at 50, you basically got an empty database on one side and a same database on the other side, right? That may not be the correct split point. So what is the correct split point? Well, you need to find what really redistributes the load equally for the problem that you're trying to solve. So what resource are you trying to optimize? Is it the number of connections? Is it the data size? Is it a blocking issue? Is it, you know, you have to kind of figure this out. Trying to be precise doesn't really help in this case. So most of the time, what people actually say, well, I just need to look at the database size and split the database in the middle in terms of size. So I actually have equal amount of load on one side and the other. And it basically kind of boils down to that. But sometimes it's actually one customer that's doing a lot, and I can actually figure that out too. And if I do that, I can get there as well for a single customer by splitting around it. But those are the things that you really need to know. And I just want to kind of pick this up and show you a quick demo as to how easy this may actually be, even if you have a GUID kind of column, which may scare you. So imagine the case where I'm actually running this blog's website. And this blog website, you know, there's people come in, they can create blogs, and it goes viral. But I really don't know whose blog is going to go viral any day. It's like, you know, it could be you the first day, you know, you some controversial thing you posted may actually just go viral, and maybe some other blog the next day. So I can never know exactly which database is going to get hit with load, or it may actually be very hard to kind of maintain the system without really knowing. And this is perfect in the case of federations because it's not a static decision. And let's assume that I kind of take a look at the database size as one of the things that I'll actually monitor. And if the database size gets to a point where it's too large, you basically get to a point where you say, okay, I'd really like to find out what is the largest table on this database. And the largest table can tell me what the median value is, and the median value is where I'll actually split. So this federation member, let me just walk you through first. This is a, I'll take you to the blogs federation over here. This is the one that we've been actually hitting with the fan-out utility. This is the one with 75 members right here. This is a federation management tool that we have shipped as part of the Windows Azure Management Portal. You can actually just click on Manage and you can get to these pages. But the one that I'm going to show you is a database called BlogsRSDB2. It's got four federations, And this Blogs Federation 3 is the one that we're going to work on. It's actually a GUID-based based partitioning scheme right here. So it has got the GUIDs at the bottom. And it turns out this last guy right here is the one that I'm actually going to split. And I just basically have some cryptic value that says this is the range, and it goes to the maximum of the GUID range. So it's FFFFFFFFFF, whatever is the largest GUID is. The smallest GUID is 0000000, right? So it's fairly readable in terms of what you can actually get. But if all I need to do is click on that member, go new query, and if I do that, I land in this page that allows me to kind of operate on that specific one. So this is the range. The use federation statement gets implanted at the top. And the basic idea is that you get this query that can actually give you the size of each member. So this table happens to be the largest table. The second query is the one that figures out the median. And the result set, let me just rerun this. Second is the one that tells me where the median point is. So if I actually take that value and I split at that value, it turns out it's actually going to spread the rows equally to both sides. So it gives you a great way to kind of go through all of these things and be able to find the median easily through queries. And you can automate some of these things to be able to say, look, if a database is getting too large, just split it at the middle. Looks like I'm actually running out of time. So what I'll do is kind of give you a quick overview of this, and then we'll actually leave. So some of the things we've actually been doing recently is improve the latency of use federation. You probably haven't noticed anything, but if you actually go there, we do two types of caching at the gateway level to make this extremely efficient. For self-sharders, it solves a connection pool fragmentation kind of issue, very interesting. We've also added identity and timestamp support for reference tables. So this is coming out. It was checked in right before I walked out the office. It's coming out in one of the upcoming releases fairly shortly. It's going to also enable data sync services to be manually set up for reference data replication and some of those things that you actually want to do for maintaining the reference table. We're also making DR much easier, and I'll talk about these two different cases of local DR and geo-DR, but locally you can actually do things like upgrade and rollback with an operation that will allow you to switch in members and switch out members. So you can basically treat your collection, and you can construct and decompose this collection into individual databases freely using this statement. And this is what's going to happen in the next few months as well. The syntax is preview, so it may actually be something slightly different when we ship it. But this basically gives you the idea to say, look, I can take DB1 and I can slot it into a federation if I wanted to. So those are the things that's going to give you the ability to kind of do some of these things, like I can copy databases out and create copies of my members. So if I roll out an update, find out that it's actually screwing up my application, I can easily roll back just by taking those snapshots and putting them back into my federation member with a metadata operation that's extremely quick. So it makes all of these kind of local scenarios that may screw up your database fairly easy to do. And point-in-time restore was talked about in another session Monday or Tuesday, but it's the ability to basically say, restore this member to this point in time. So I want to go back to yesterday or 2 days ago or 2 weeks ago. And you will be able to do that through tools. These are all coming capabilities in future. GeoDR also is the capability that kind of flies your data between multiple data centers. This is also coming in future. And with federations, you're going to be able to do this so that you can have your federation in one data center and GeoDR that federation to another data center as well. That's all I had. Sorry I had to rush through this last part, but hopefully you guys enjoyed it and all the restroom analogies and everything. Please do fill out the evals. So I should actually get to that slide that has the... Where are you? All right. And thank you.